Welcome to Halacha in a Year, where we can get to learn all the most relevant halacha through the prism of the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. You are listening to Rabbi Yaakov Tramp. This shiur is kindly sponsored by the Moshe Group and CA in Zuchus of Rivka Bela Bas Nechama Shifra and in honor of Rabbi Tramp.
Today, halacha that relates to taking the four species and the Hoshanas. This is Simon Kuf Lamed Zayin 137 in the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. We're going to look at five concepts today, starting with the idea of actually taking the lulav and the esrog. So what is the mitzvah of netilas lulav? So the mitzvah actually is just holding the four species together on Sukkos. The shaking actually is, technically speaking, not part of the actual mitzvah itself. That is an additional segula, an additional benefit that we add on afterwards, but it's actually just holding them all together. So how should they be held? The lulav bundle, that's the lulav with the arava and the hadas, should be held with the spine facing towards oneself in the right hand. The esrog is held in the left hand, and they are placed together, joined together. There should be no interruption between the esrog and the bundle of the lulav on the other side. How must the esrog be held? So all of these species need to be held with their stems facing down. Therefore, when it comes to the esrog, what we do is we have the stem facing upwards at the beginning and say the bracha, then switch it round, and then one is holding it correctly, and then do the waving. Why is it done in such a way? So we always know that the bracha needs to immediately precede the mitzvah. And being as one cannot fulfill the mitzvah of the esrog upside down with the stem upwards, one puts it that way, says the bracha, so it's not in a position where one can be yotzei, and then switches it so that the stem is facing downwards, then one fulfills the mitzvah right after having said the bracha. Which brachas are actually recited? So every day the bracha of Al Netilas Lulav is recited, which is on taking the lulav. And then on the first day of Sukkos, there's also the bracha of Shehechiyanu, not on the second day. What happens is the first day of Sukkos on Shabbos. So on Shabbos, we do not take the lulav and esrog, and therefore the Shehechiyanu would go on the second day, which would be the Sunday, which is the first time one would be taking the lulav and esrog. Why is the bracha Al Netilas Lulav, on taking the lulav? There are four species. Why are we only naming the date front? So the reason is because it's the tallest and most prominent, so it's the one which is most visible, and we call the entire bundle colloquially by its name, even so much so that the bracha goes after that. We say today, did you take lulav, even though there are other species? What if one reversed hands, holding the lulav in the left hand and the esrog in the right? In this case, a person must take them again, but does not say a new bracha on the lulav and esrog. What about a left-handed person? So a left-handed person switches it and takes a lulav in the stronger hand, which would be his left hand, and the esrog in the other. And similarly, if he did it in the wrong way, the reverse for himself, he would have to reverse them, but do it without a bracha. What about somebody who is ambidextrous, a person who has equal usage of both hands? In that case, though, an ambidextrous person would be treated like a right-handed person. We move to our second concept today, and that is the shaking of the lulav. So how must the lulav and esrog be held when shaking? So they should be held close together with no separation. So that means a person really should remove any gloves they have, and they should not have rings on their hands. And even the tefillin straps, if they're wearing tefillin at that point, should be taken off their hands. So there's no interruption between their hands and the lulav bundle. What is the order of waving of the bracha? So the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch quotes the classical method, which is east, south, west, north, up, and down. So that is if one's facing east, that would go forward, right, back, left, up, down. There's a particular order that it moves smoothly. The Kabbalistic perspective from the Arizal, you'll see Hasidim do this, which is right, left, forward, up, down, and back, which is the more recent Kabbalistic practice, which has emerged in the last 500 years. How is waving done in Hallel at Hoidel? So it is also done as part of the Tefillah during the Hallel. So at Hoidel has six words excluding the name of Hashem. We do not wave for the name of Hashem. So we would do each word going frontwards, rightwards, backwards, sideways, leftwards, upwards, downwards. So Hoidu, Ki, Tov, Ki, Le'olam, Chastoi. But we do not wave at Hashem's name. The Chazan waves for Hoidu and Yom Rana, which have six words excluding Hashem's name. But the community would wave the Lulav for all the times they say Hoidu as the refrain. How is the waving done in Ona Hashem Oshiano? So that's four words, but taking the word of Hashem out, because we don't wave for that, then it's done. There's two wavings per word. So Ona would be right, would be front, right. And then Hashem, no waving. Hoshia, it would be back, left. Na, up, down. That's the way that the Kitzur prescribes as well. And we only shake for the Ona Hashem Oshiano, not for the Ona Hashem Hatzlichonos. How is the waving done at the end of the Hallels? There's one more Hoidu, which is said twice then, and then both the Chazan and the congregation, the community, do it together with those six words. What is the proper way to wave downwards? So the Kitzra says, we do not turn the branches downwards, we just lower them downwards. He does record that there are some who actually turn them downwards, and he said everybody should follow their custom. It seems that the predominant custom today is just to lower them downwards. Does one need to turn their face in each direction? So the answer is no. Only the top of the lulav needs to be pointed in that direction. How is the movement made? So one needs to only rustle the leaves. No, force is not required. It's not need to shake it as if there's a hurricane happening in order to be able to fulfill this particular mitzvah. Why is this done? The Mishnah and the Gemara talk about this idea of to stave off Ruach HaYisra, bad winds, to bring bracha to the world around us, to the crops, to the world water at the right time, because it's a time where we judged on the water. So there's a lot of Kabbalistic ideas which are incorporated into these wavings as well. We move to our third concept today, and that is preparations and restrictions relating to the four species. So may one eat before fulfilling the mitzvah of lulav? The answer is no. It is forbidden to eat before shaking lulav. And this, generally speaking, is all right, because most people go to shul and they're not allowed to eat before they daven, so they'll just take it to shul and daven in such a way as well. It is worthwhile noting that some people are the minhag to go to the sukkah and to shake the lulav. This could be because of the connection between the two primary mitzvahs of the day, the sukkah and the lulav, but it could also be on a practical level. Rav Hershel Shachter points out that because many people used to be asleep in the sukkah, they'd wake up and the first thing they'd do in the morning would be to shake lulav and esrog. But it wouldn't necessarily be the case if one does not sleep in the sukkah to go outside to the sukkah. It wouldn't be necessary in that respect as well. Just an interesting discussion around this topic. What about people who are traveling and or people, let's say, in villages that don't have a lulav and esrog and they're waiting for somebody to bring it to them? So they should not eat until midday if they need to be able to do the lulav and esrog, even if they've finished their davening already. If a person is weak, one can taste something. But if one's not weak, one should not even taste something, not even drink anything until one has done the lulav and esrog. This is important for, let's say, people who do have the minhag to have coffee or water before they go to shul. They should not be doing that before they shake the lulav and the esrog. What is the halacha of placing the lulav in water? So generally speaking, one is not allowed to place plants in water on Shabbos, new water, because it helps them grow. But over here, this over here is just keeping the lulav fresh in this respect, and so one may return it to the water. One may not change the water on Shabbos, but one may return it to the water on Shabbos as well. On Chol HaMoed, one should change the water every day to keep it fresh, and he records a very fascinating custom that people would buy enough aravos to be able to change them every day so they're always fresh. Those are always the ones which are the weakest. May one smell hadassim? So one is not allowed to smell hadassim all 7 days, including Shabbos. The myrtle branch has a beautiful smell. May one smell the esrog? So one may not smell the esrog during the weekdays of Sukkot, but one may smell it on Shabbos itself. And so the bracha of anosin reach tov aperos Hashem places a beautiful smell in fruit. Why the difference? So the difference is the primary usage of the hadassim, of the myrtle, is smell. And therefore, when they set aside for the mitzvah, all of their usage, all their basic primary usages, are also forbidden, so smell is not allowed even on Shabbos. Whereas an esrog's primary usage is for eating. Its secondary benefit is smell, which means to say that therefore it is not asur to smell it as well. There's a question about the bracha during the weekday, because it's hooked to the mitzvah, so it's set aside for its mitzvah, maybe one should not have the ability to do a bracha, so we don't enter into the question of doing a bracha during that time. But it should be done it can be done on Shabbos and smelled. What is the status of a lulav and an esrog on Shabbos regarding mukta? So a lulav is mukta on Shabbos and forbidden to move, but an esrog is not mukta because it's allowed to be smelled. So it may be put back into its cotton, but one should not put a new cotton out for the esrog, because it will now impart fragrance into that, which is also a concern on Shabbos. We move on to the next topic, and that is ownership requirements. Do I need to own the four species to use them on Sukkot? The answer is, on the first day of Yom Tov, absolutely. Why is that? Because the pasuk says, "Lekatem lochem b'yom rishon," you'll take for yourselves on the first day, and the Gemara understands that means "min shelochem," from yours. Unlike the sukkah, you do not need to own. You can go to your friend's sukkah. You cannot borrow a lulav and esrog of your friends. So what about Yom Tov Sheni in the diaspora, the second day? So that's treated like the first day of Yom Tov, that one should not borrow a lulav and esrog. So what happens if I give it to my friend as a gift, on the condition that he returns it? In that case, then it is considered like it's his while he has it before he returns it, and he can fulfill his obligation with that beloved esrog. What happens if I give it to somebody by default without explicitly saying that this is a gift? Amanas lahachsir. So you assume that the intent in a Jew's mind to give to another Jew is for them to be able to fulfill the mitzvah, and therefore giving it with all the necessary halachic mechanisms for it to be a gift. So therefore, it will actually be a valid gift. What about partnerships and purchasing the Arba Minim? So let's say two people would put in the money together to get the Arba Minim. We assume that the partnership is by default in order to fulfill the mitzvah, which means that each of them are makne, each of them bequeath their section, their ownership in it to the other person, or the other person is using it so they can fulfill the mitzvah on the first and second day. What about the shul's own set of four species? So in that case, when put people together to own this, the idea is that they give the permission to whoever picks it up to have it for that moment for them to be using it. However, the kitzur does point out it's still better to get a gift from a friend of an as lahakser than the shul, because there's just so many constituents, so many different people, that not everybody might have the right intention to be able to do this in the best way. What about giving it to children? So one should not give it to a minor on the first day of Yom Tov before adults have fulfilled the mitzvah, because although they can acquire something, they do not have the ability halachically to bequeath something, to give something else to somebody else, and therefore they may receive it but not be able to return it halachically, even though they physically have given it back to you. They may not have the ability to relinquish their ownership rights as a minor. Moving to our last topic, and that is the concept of hashanas and hakavos. So what are Hoshanas? Hoshanas are where we bring the Sefer Torah out to the Bima, and the Aron remains open, and saying special prayers where we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to save us, to give us the year of bracha and sustenance. We walk around, the Lulav and Esrog, around the Bima once daily. When are they said? So they are said after Musaf. However, the Kitzur does record that there are some who have the custom to do it after Hanel earlier on. Why is it done? So it's to commemorate the surrounding of the Mizbeach, which was done each day in the base of Migdash with the Aravos. There was a minhag to take these long Aravos they got from an area outside Yerushalayim called Motza, just down the hill, and they would take it and surround the Mizbeach every day, and this is done with the Lulav in our day to commemorate the Arava. What happens on Hoshana Rabbah? So all the Sefer Torah are taken out and placed by the Bima, and the Bima is circled seven times with seven sets of prayers. Which direction is the circle made? So it's always done to the right, which means counterclockwise to the Bima. Who can do the Hoshanas? So anyone who has the four species should be able to do the Hoshana, the circlings as well. What happens if somebody owns a Lulav but does not join the circles? That's considered a Davara. This is a bad thing. A person who has the Lulav and Esrog should be circling the Bima. What about the custom of putting a candle in the empty Aron during the Hoshanas? It's to symbolize the idea of the Torah being illuminating light. The Kitzur says it's not a good custom because the Aron should be only used for the Aron itself, for the Torah itself. What our circuits done on Shabbos? So on Shabbos we do not do the Hoshanas, but we do open the Aron and do the prayer, which is a modified prayer because we can't do the same level of bakasha of supplication on Shabbos, but we do not actually surround. We do not take the Torah out or walk with the Arba Minim. What about mourners? So a mourner who's within 12 months or 30 days may not do the Hoshanas. Instead, it's recommended that person gives their Arba Minim, their four species, to somebody who might not have. And the general practice of the Gabbaim is to give the Avel, the person who's in Avelus, the Torah to hold while the Hakavos are being done, while the Hoshanas are being done. With this, we conclude. This Siman, have a wonderful and meaningful day.